Hey, what's going on? It's Bill Burr, and it's time for the Thursday afternoon just before Friday, Monday morning podcast, and I am checking in on you. You know how I do this show. I usually talk here to myself. I usually babble. I usually ramble, and then I try to read out loud. But every once in a while, I have a special guest, and this is one of these Thursdays. This man is here to promote his new book, Everybody is Awful Except for You. That will be, you can pre-order now, and it's going to be available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all that stuff. Please welcome Jim Florentine, everybody.
It's good to see you, Bill. Thanks for having me back, man.
You like how I did the big build-up? I said the book. I did the whole thing. I was waiting for everybody to sit back and try and guess who the hell it was going to be, you know, and then I dropped the name on him. That's old school showbiz right there.
That is, because then, like, who could it be? Maybe it's, you know, someone hasn't talked in a while. Maybe he's getting a Louis C.K. exclusive.
Maybe Louis's coming back.
Yeah, maybe he's coming back, and he's going to do it on Bill's podcast, and, you know. Yeah.
We were just talking about that. You might as well dive in. That whole Me Too thing, it's just, like, obviously had to happen and everything, but it is such, like, a bully environment. Even, like, the bullshit one, if it's a bullshit one, you can't say anything. Like, recently one came out, and it was just like, all right, this just seemed like this woman wanted a famous boyfriend, and it didn't happen. And in the end, she went on her friend's blog or some shit and trashed this guy. And I can't even name names before all these fucking lunatics start coming at. Like, there's no like, hey, let's examine this. It's just all, this person said that. That means that's how it happened. That's how the whole thing went down. And let's burn down this person's life. And their entire ability to earn a living is a little nuts.
Absolutely. And me being a single guy out there, absolutely. You don't know.
Jesus, do you like sign in triplicate before you even like?
I'm trying to get, like, you know, Shaq's contract he used to sign, or Michael Jordan or whatever. Supposedly they had a thing where they would sign, like, their assistant go, okay, you go in the hotel room next door. You know what's going to happen. Sign here.
Yes. This is.
So here's a consent order, and then you know what, you're going in there, and you guys are going to have sex, and that's it.
One of the funnier things that I've read, as far as, like, just all this extreme mindset that's out there about politics, that's out there about this Me Too stuff. Everything is just, you have to be, like, all the way on the other side of the room against the wall, or all the way on the other one, is, oh, God, dude, I'm getting so old. I literally forgot my point right in the middle of it. I swear to God. I was going to make the greatest point. I literally just fucking, what the fuck was it? Oh, I know. There's going to be a lot of this, by the way. Coercion is not consent, is what they said. When you coerce somebody right into doing something, that is not consent. So I was thinking, like, okay, does that mean I don't have to pay my bank loan this fucking month on my car loan? Hey, yeah. Buddy, you don't want this, man. You want the turbo, man. You come around the corner, they're hearing that engine. The whole fucking world is coercion. Everybody, our whole business, everything you, anytime you sell anything, any of it, half the shit my wife does to me. Dude, if coercion is not consent and women actually stuck by that, would brunch still exist?
That's a good point. No.
No guy, if you actually could, do you want to go to that? No, I do not. And then she can be like, well, Mom, my friends are going to be there. That's coercion. Like, because immediately you're like, oh, fuck, I don't want her to cry.
Anytime a guy goes to brunch, he's taking the bullet on something.
Oh, my word. The worst is when they come out. They said it's going to be like 40 minutes. Is that going to be? Can you still stand? Like, you have the option to say no. I mean, I say no. That's why I fight with my wife so much. No, let's get out of here.
Yeah, we could have just.
I can literally Google how to make fucking, no pun intended, eggs Florentine. Go to the supermarket. Right. It's eggs and steamed fucking spinach on an English muffin. I can figure this out. No, but I just, it has a fun ambiance here. So, look, obviously, it's great that there's a forum now that all these some of the shit this guy's did. Like, who the fuck knew people did that? I mean, I knew there was fucking creeps out there. But, like, now it's just, it's getting to the point but there's been a few where, there's a few things where it's like, you couldn't handle that amongst yourselves? Like, did I need to know all the gory details of what you guys did here? And then there's other ones that are just complete bullshit. But I still don't feel that we're at a place where you can actually say that. Because I think if you do, then what? Then you're a rapist?
Yeah, absolutely. You condone it, and you understand. Women now, they just said, we just want the guys to listen. We don't want them to respond. Don't come back like you're in a relationship, and when your girl's complaining about something, well, I know how to fix it, but just listen.
That makes sense if what they're saying is true.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if you're talking about apples and you're saying they're oranges, and then you're telling me I'm supposed to shut the fuck up and then watch somebody I know lose their fucking life, their career, that doesn't make sense either. And I feel like a lot of people feel that, and everyone's choosing like self-preservation, like, sorry, I keep hitting the table here, like the Golden Globes.
Right.
When you went to that, it's like, dude, if you didn't have a black shirt underneath your tuxedo, I mean, you were finished. That meant you advocated sexual assault that night.
Then you had to wear the pin. Okay. The time's up thing.
But here's the thing. You literally could have just sexually assaulted somebody, but wore a black shirt and had the pin, and no one would fuck with you.
Right.
So I'm old, so I don't get what's going on anymore. I don't get it. Sorry, man. You're here to sell a book.
No.
I didn't want to get into this.
No, I do want to get into it. No, absolutely. I mean, the story that we're talking about is just insane. You know, there was oral sex performed two times on each other. And then when he wanted to have intercourse, she's like, nah, I don't know. And he's like, all right, we'll hang or whatever like that. And then he had a funny line, though. I thought it was a funny joke.
What's that?
So he goes, come on, let's just have intercourse. Cause everybody did. And she goes, you know what? I'd rather wait for the second date for that. And he was at his place. And he goes, so if I pour you a new glass of wine, is that considered a second date? That's a fucking funny line the guy's throwing out there. It's a desperate line.
It is funny.
It is funny. And then she goes, no. And then they hung out for a little longer. And she goes, I'm just going to go home. She wasn't upset. He goes, okay, I'll get you a car service. Sent her in a car. Text her the next day. Hey, I had a good time with you last night. Well, I didn't. And then that's how it started.
Some of these what do you call them, the cougars after a show? Like if you go out and you're selling anything, dude, I mean, you got to get manhandled when you're out there, womanhandled, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
Once a weekend it happens to me because I sell merchandise after a show. Once a weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Grab my ass.
Literally something, if you did it, like over.
Put your hand on my wife's tit. No, it's okay. Or a girl goes, hey, put it on my tits. Come on, it'll be funny. Or every time, all the time.
You got to come out after a show now. You know, like when those guys wear that suit where you fucking... You dismantle a bomb. You got to come out yeah, that thing all made of lead. Well, tell me, what is the book about? Because I already, like, I love the title. It's Everybody is Awful, and then parentheses, except you. How I heard that was everybody, you know, on Facebook going on and on about how great they are and, like, how the world's so awful. And, you know, I don't know, just having the whole, you know, the selfie generation.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. It's just calling people out, bad Facebook posts, you know, people bragging, people looking for attention. You know the person that posts going, I'm on my way to the hospital, and they just leave it at that. I go, okay, so now you're going to get 50. What's wrong?
Yeah, we're all-
are you okay? If I lived in New Jersey, I'd be there for you, but I can't. Please keep us updated. Is everything okay? And then at the end, it was just a sore throat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You
yeah.
know what I mean? It's never.
How do you always figure? You always figure out these things like this, crank yankers, all the way to this. You always find terrorizing telemarketers. You always find like that thing that people are like, I don't know. It's, I always see whenever you do a project, I always think it was right fucking there. It was hanging right there. And you have like this, you've done what was the show on VH1? I just went blank.
That metal show. Yeah.
Yeah. How did you know that there was going to be there was a bunch of people like me who wanted to know what Bobby Blotzer was doing? I was so excited to see all those guys. Like, there was such a huge part of my life and, a part of my life, you know, as you're a teenager. He's a drummer for Rat, by the way. And as just being a teenager where there's sort of all of this exciting stuff and then all of this scary and depressing shit all happening at the same time. And that music was so great and so fun. That, like, I mean, all of those guys and those bands to me are on the same level of like the Fonz. Where, like, when I was a really little kid, like the Fonz, they had the trading cards. And, like, literally, you're looking at somebody like made my childhood happier. When I watched your show, that metal show, I was like, oh my God, I fucking love that guy. Like, what is it just how your brain works? Like, how do you always seem to find?
I don't know. I think we just got it at a good time. VH1 Classic was like looking for one original program. They didn't have anything on it, just showing repeats of just right. old music videos. And we pitched like a heavy metal talk show, like the Tonight Show for AC/DC fans. They said, okay, we'll give you money for one pilot. We pulled Lita Ford out of retirement. She didn't do anything for like 20 years. She was living on an island, raising her kids. So we had her as a pilot episode. We're like, all right, there's no
way. Now she's back on the road. She never sees her kids.
Yeah, yeah.
she was being a great mom.
She was being a great mom until we gave her exposure. It's like, oh, damn, I got a career. Next thing you know, she's put three albums out in the last 9 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, luckily the head of, like, VH1 Classic, this guy used to be a metal DJ up in Buffalo. He goes, I love this show. Put it on the air. You know, nice. It's going to be a shitty budget. And I remember my manager goes, this is the worst contract I've ever seen in my life. You sure you want to sign us? I go, yeah, look, whatever. Who cares? At least we'll be on the air. And we did 140 episodes.
What?
Seven seasons.
Who is some of your favorites? Because I knew that you were kind of already in that world a little bit. Like a lot of you guys, like you, Norton, and all those guys. Big J, you guys seem to like know Brewer.
Brewer, yeah.
You guys seem to know like rock stars and stuff like that. You were kind of already in that world. But when you went there, what was, like, your bucket list of guests, and were you able to get most of them?
Yeah, I mean, Tony Iommi, you know, we got Geezer Butler, Ronnie James Dio before he passed away.
Right.
Was on twice. Then we got Marilyn Manson. You know, we got Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine. I'm a huge fan. We got Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. So every season was somebody different. Like, you got to be kidding. Sammy Hagar, Michael Anthony.
You know what I loved about Steve Harris was even people who had knew nothing about music would be like, that guy's an unbelievable bass player.
Yeah.
He was, yeah, his fingers just flying. Actually, Iron Maiden was the one that when I first wanted to play drums, it was their drummer, Nico McBrain, that was one of those Scream for Me, Long Beach, you know, that they filmed or whatever. And I just remember when they finally went behind him, because you always see the arms moving.
Yeah, you could never see him. He's buried in the set.
But when I saw the legs moving too, I was like, that looks fucking cool. And I already failed on guitar because he actually had to, like, know notes and shit like that. And just coming from more of a sports background, I was like, oh, you just kind of beat the shit out of it.
I know. After
that looks like fun.
After, a big Patriot loss, you can no problem pounding the drums.
I know. Oh, speaking of which, what are you – I know you're there's a famous story about you. You're a huge Miami Dolphin fan. There's this story that Keith Robinson has told me probably – a dozen times, and I never stop him because I love it. You were on some flight watching a Dolphin game, and you were going. Please tell me it's true, right? You were landing, and the stewardess told you to shut your phone off or whatever you were watching. You refused to because it was an important part of
this.
This
is before cell phones. I had one of those little TVs with the antenna, you know, the little box. And it was the Dolphins and Chiefs.
You buy it off of Bobby Kelly because he was buying the next thing? He always had that shit.
This was like, I don't know, probably 99. It was, '98 when Montana was on the Chiefs. It was a Dolphin-Chief playoff game. And I was on a flight from Florida, and it was on, like, the local ABC because it was a playoff game. Right. So I had one of those little old-school TVs with an antenna, and I watched it under a blanket the whole game because I didn't have to switch. Like, if I'm over in South Carolina, I got to find the ABC affiliate there. And then when I'm on,
awesome.
And I'm switching around like this. And in Baltimore, I got to find the other affiliate. So I watched the whole game, and the woman came over like 20 minutes left. You have a TV on. Shut that off. It's going to affect the plane. I go, too bad. I go, it's 21-21, and Marino's driving with 2 minutes left. She goes, you got to shut. I go, I'm not shutting it off. I don't care. And even when the plane landed, I was still watching the whole thing. And they won, like, right as the plane landed. I'm like, yes.
Oh, that's why it was pre-9/11.
It was pre-9/11. And I had that little, and you couldn't have any kind of electronic device on the plane.
No, but I'm saying if you said no, that would have been like, like the CIA.
Absolutely. They would have been waiting.
Would come on and fucking.
Yeah, they would have been waiting for me when I landed. But I would not shut the TV off. I had it on the blanket. I didn't get caught till like 20 minutes left in the flight. I watched the whole game. My girlfriend at the time was sitting next to me. I was screaming. She was miserable. She goes, way to end a bad trip. I'm like, yeah, too bad. I'm breaking up with you anyway when I get back.
Oh, I didn't know. I thought you wanted like a JetBlue because I was thinking, well, why wouldn't they just shut the thing off?
No,
you had your own TV.
I had my own little TV. I brought it just in case. I was already doing the math. I'm like, if they win, they're going to play on Saturday at 4:30. That's when my flight is. So I'm bringing my TV just in case, and that's exactly what happened.
Wow. Do you know when the Patriots beat Seattle, I was flying from Sydney, Australia to like Auckland, New Zealand, and I missed the whole game. Because I was thinking that it's the Super Bowl. They show it around the world. They're going to have it on they had TVs. All they had was soccer. I was like, you got to be kidding me. So when I got off the plane, I knew it was towards the end of the game, but I just had to know. So I asked my wife, I go, what's the score? And she's like, says the Patriots are winning. And I was like, really? Because I was still, after those two giant losses, I was like, oh, God, now he's going to be 3-3, fuck. And I go, how much time's left? And she's like, it says it's over. I go, no way. No way. And then I looked, I fucking started screaming in the middle of New Zealand, looking like a maniac. And then I went back to the hotel and they were just showing the Super Bowl on this weird channel with no commercials. And I watched it twice back to back. And then I watched it again the next morning and I couldn't, like, I had no idea about that whole play in the end or anything like that. But anyways, getting back to the initial thing I was going to ask you, a lot of people, you know, are talking about the Jaguars and their defense, you know, and they're going into New England. You know, nobody thought that they were going to go into Pittsburgh. Well, some people did, but they went in there. They won there. They beat Buffalo Bills, but they beat the Bills and it was like this snooze fest. And then, you know, they went into the Steelers and they had like a shootout. So everybody's talking about how great their defense is. And I'm still like, they just gave up like 40, 41 points. But the week before, who the fuck are they? So Jim Florentine, a man who brought a TV on a fucking plane in 1999. What is your gut feeling? Patriots or?
Oh, Patriots. Absolutely. You don't win in Foxborough. And, you know, in Patriots Gillette Stadium, you don't win there. A championship game. You think Belichick's – the Steelers were looking past the Jaguars, waiting for the championship game.
They always fucking do that.
Always do it. You see how they came out.
That year we played them, they had already bought their fucking plane. Like, that's the, you know, the urban myth. They've already bought their plane tickets and hotel reservations down in New Orleans.
You get Belichick to prepare for Blake Bortles, they got no shot.
Yeah,
I don't care what kind of defense
they're
running
back. Their running back got hurt too. Yeah, but that defense looks good.
But that's all right. Birdie will pick him apart.
Except
he'll find somebody.
Last week they did not look. He'll, good.
Some guy will come off the practice squad tomorrow and he'll catch 10 passes on Sunday.
But here's the thing: how long can we do this? We just keep doing it, and he doesn't have a number one. This is the thing: we don't have a number one receiver right now, with Edelman being out the whole year, and you know, I know we got Gronk. He's a tight end, but like our you know. There's a lot of passes that, I don't know.
No.
There's that one guy, he fucking stops. It's like, keep running. And the amount of times I see Brady going, like, just keep fucking running. So, I don't know. Like, this game scares me. This game scares me because they're going to do the whole thing. Hey, Jacksonville, they're not supposed to be here. They got nothing to lose. Blah, 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 blah. I'm getting all nervous about that.
No, I think but they had their run. I mean, if the Bills had any kind of quarterback, they should have won that game. The first playoff game, and Pittsburgh was waiting for New England. They overlooked it. They weren't prepared. You saw the first quarter. They weren't even, right. You know, their head was in a different game. Patriots, the only problem they could have is maybe if they play Minnesota in Minnesota, because the game would be a home game.
That's
a home
what
Super
I was
Bowl.
Nervous about. It was like the Saints. Like, so, I called that Saints game. I called it. I was like, Drew Brees is going to go in there. He gets no respect. He's like the third all-time passer and all that shit. He's going to go in there. And I kept saying that, you know, all these Minnesota fans were going to go to the Mall of America, going to the giant Kleenex store, and they were going to be crying and everything. And exactly what the fuck I said was going to happen until that last play with 14 seconds left, which I have never, ever in the history of watching people fuck up, I have never seen anybody do what that poor kid did. It's like he put his head down and stopped looking at the guy. And then he basically threw a block, took out his own fucking guy. It's just, I still cannot fucking believe that happened.
I was watching a game with a bunch of friends of ours at 17-0 halftime. And my brother gambles. He's like, all right, look, there's 10-1 odds. You want to put on the Saints, come back and win this game. So we put like $2,000 in a pot. So I would have won $800 if they would have just made a tackle right there.
And
so
the spread was 5, right?
The spread was 5, but we had to just for the Saints to win the game from the second half. They were down 17-0 at halftime. I go, I'll do that.
So they had to win the half or win the game?
Win the whole game. Okay. At 17-0. I'm like, I'll put $80 in. I would have won $800. Fuck. And I'm watching that.
So what were you guys doing with
14
seconds?
We're all counting our money. We're like, yes, that's just all right, good. We got this. Oh, you owe this. All right, now I'm only down this and this. And then we watch the last play like...
I was picturing all you guys walking in, talking to De Niro with buying your wife's furs and stuff. What'd I say? Don't buy anything. Don't take it back. Get out of here. And oh, my God. That's fucking. I wish you guys had the reaction video of that. You guys just talking about all this shit you were going to
I was already caressing off my bets. I'm like, all right, cool. I'm only down 30 for the day. You took this, and we're just already figuring out. Like, we got this.
That's one of those games I immediately went to YouTube to see people's reactions to it. And these fucking nerds were like the first people that put theirs up. And it was the worst reaction ever. They're like, oh, my God. Wow. That's crazy. And they already monetized it and everything. I'm right. so fucking mad at him. I wanted to see Saints fans crying and Viking fans crying because I figured like the best reaction video I ever saw was when Auburn, my favorite one, when Auburn caught that field goal that came up short against Alabama and the dude ran the whole thing back. Like Alabama was kicking to win the game. And it was a long field goal. And if they missed, who gives a shit? We go into overtime. I believe that was the scenario. And it came up short, and you can return it. And yeah. The Auburn guy fucking caught it. And they caught him sleeping, and he ran it like 105 yards back. And my favorite one was these two girls. One was for Auburn. One was for Alabama. And the one screaming, go, go. The other one's like freaking out. And then the end, the fucking Auburn girl looks at the Alabama girl, who's just totally stunned. She's like, y'all just lost. Fucking great. So, anyways, I keep forgetting to talk about the book. So, you can pre-order this thing. Where do they go? Do they go to iTunes? They go to iBook? Where do you go?
Amazon.
For
it's all the link's up on Amazon.
Oh, the link is up on Amazon. It's Jim Florentine. Everybody is awful except you.
It comes out February 20th. It's just me. It's basically based off my podcast where I just, you know, people send in like bad Facebook posts or like vanity plates, you know, awful vanity.
Dude, this is some of the stuff. Bed of Hennessy. Pussy power wash, awful Facebook rule number 10, drown us in dumbass details. Oh, this is fucking great.
And these are actual Facebook posts by people that posted. And then I just, you know, just take them down. You know,
the
weather post in Ohio, you know, Mother Nature, you know, go away. I'm like, okay.
Do you know what's funny is earlier this year I went to this fucking award show. One of these ones that was not televised. That's the level that I'm at in this business, right? So I had a friend of mine. He's like, hey, man, this is going to be like this big fucking thing, blah, 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 blah. You know, eventually maybe it'll be a big award show. You know, do you want to go? My wife loves music. And double date, blah, blah. So, like, all right, let's go. So right before we're going to go, the other couple has to cancel because of some bullshit. So now we're going to this fucking thing that I, you know, I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ. So we show up. Dude, I swear to God, every fucking person, say 20 people won awards that night, 19 people cried and talked about how hard it was and everything they went through and blah, 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 blah. And I was just sitting there. I just wanted to yell out, you're in your 20s. How hard could you? 10 years ago, you were in high school. You're accepting a fucking award and you got a hit album. How fucking hard could it have been? I was like almost 20 years in, still on a fucking futon.
Right.
Nothing. I don't know.
I was paying my bills with change at 36 years old.
Jesus.
Taking it down to the change thing at the supermarket, you know, like they take like 8 cents off a dollar. That was paying at 36.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Like, who gives a fuck? Like I don't know. I don't know. The entertainment business is difficult. Like, is it easy for somebody else? Nobody goes into this business. Even if you make it in 2 seconds, then all that means is you're going to get fucking slammed back down to the ground because when you start to dip, you're not going to know how to handle it and you're going to fucking freak out. It's better to get punched in the face repeatedly as you're walking up the hill other than to just be on the chairlift, go right up to the top, and the first time you drop a ski or something like that, you're just going to go right down the other side of the mountain. So I actually, it was one of the few times where I was semi-ruining something.
Did your wife know you were annoyed?
Yeah, but she thought it was funny.
She did.
She did think it was funny because right in the beginning it was annoying. I got there and this guy, like I'm standing there, you know, the panic, you know, when you get like you're on like the guest list and you know they're going to forget your name. And it's like, oh, I don't see it. And then they found it. It was like, I had like this relief. And all of a sudden the security guy's just like, excuse me, sir, I'm going to need you to clear this. And we need you to clear that. And I'm thinking like, I'm in this totally open area. This woman had to fucking walk by. It was just like some, I don't know who the fuck it was. But like she literally had 10 feet on either side of us. And the guy was still telling me I needed to get further up. It's like, do you want me to become part of the paint? I don't know. So, sorry. This is just podcast is becoming about me complaining.
No. It's perfect. That's what it should be.
Well, I don't know. Every once in a while when I have a guest and I try to want to like lighten it up or something. How is the...
We don't want to lighten it up.
Okay. How's the New York comedy scene?
It's great.
Have you been, I moved away, believe it or not, like over 10 years ago. So when I go back now, I don't know who a lot of the new people are. All of the...
There's a ton of them.
Yeah, as it should be.
Right, and they're good. You know, they're good. It's thriving, man. There's all the clubs. They're packed. And I really like the Stand. The Stand is my club in the city.
Stand is great.
Love that place.
And there's Dangerfields I still love.
I haven't walked in there in 15 years.
And then the New York Comedy Club, Al doesn't own it anymore.
No, it's gotten
better.
All right. It's actually a decent gig.
And then
they
like,
got the Village Underground.
Then there's like the Comedy Cellar, and they got like three. Like they did. They when I was in New York, the Cellar had the Cellar. They had the Wah. I don't think they had the Village. Is it Village Underground? I don't think they had that.
No,
they had like they're like playing Monopoly. Like they keep.
They got three rooms going. They do like 10 shows on a Saturday night.
It's incredible. I remember I used to be so jealous of when I was living with Bobby Kelly. We would both have 9 shows, but I would be all over the city, and he would have 3 at the Boston, 3 at the Wah, 3 at the Cellar, and he didn't have to take 1 cab. He could just walk to all of them, and he, you know, you got paid $50 a spot.
Yeah.
So he'd have 9 50s, and I'd have a bunch of 20s and 5s all smashed together from jumping in cabs, going from the Strip down to the Cellar, back up to Stand Up New York. Can you do that anymore? I know they kind of switched the way some of those guys.
Yeah, changed. You could still do it. It's I try to stay like one club, one or two, maybe New York Comedy Club, the Stand. I don't feel like running around, like rushing around. You know, I'm not my 20s anymore where I'm just jumping on, doing this, running into another set, go back over here. I'm like, I'm good. You know what I mean? I'm working on my shit. I know what I need to do. I'm like, sometimes I look just like to stay in the same. Like, I'll do 3 shows. I did New Year's Eve. I did 4 shows at the Stand. Just stayed there all night.
Oh, it's perfect. Other than the only time that sucks is when they're in between shows and it gets a little packed. But then they put them downstairs and you're fine.
Yeah.
What do you? How much stand up do you do with all these like TV shows and books and all that type? How often do you get to get
2 weekends? I'm on the road 2 weekends a month.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and I do 1 weekend in New York. And then I take 1 weekend off because I got my son 1 weekend a month, also during the week, too.
How old is your son now?
7.
That's amazing.
He's already getting into stand-up. He's been on stage like 5 times.
And he plays like drum. You're like raising
drums,
like the coolest kid ever.
Drums, singing. Now he's all about stand-up now because I took him out. There was a show, Ronnie B. Bennington does a show, his radio show at the Hard Rock in New York every year. Does a live show. There's 400 people. It's sold out. And he did a segment where comedians go up and tell an old joke. So I brought my son with me, and he goes, Luke, if you want to go on stage, you can tell an old joke. He goes, okay, I will. And he went up there. I introduced him. The place went nuts. He grabs the mic, and I didn't even tell him to say it. He goes, are you guys ready to hear a funny joke? And I'm like, man, he's already working the crowd. The place goes nuts.
Sounds like he's a host.
I know, and he tells a joke, and and it gets an applause break, and he's up there, and we stood up on stage for another 10 minutes. He felt that ever since then. He's like, Dad, you got a show tonight? Come on, go get a show. Let's just go get a show. Just you can go on stage, right? You can go down to the club. I go, yeah, I could. Come on, we got to do a show. When are we going to do a show?
You know what's going to be funny is when he has to do like a book report. Remember how nervous you would get? He's going to be like all amped up to do it. He's going to be psyched. I remember when I was in school, I would just be like, I would be so scared. And then the teacher wouldn't call on me. I'd be like, thank God. And then I'd see my buddy go up. And then when he'd be done, I'd be like, oh, fuck, I wish I was him because it would be over. And I had horrible fucking, I guess, was that stage fright?
And public speaking, yeah.
Once
I knew I wanted to do comedy, it took me a year to get on stage, to get the balls to get on stage, because I was petrified.
That's what I did. I gave myself, I made a New Year's resolution in 1992. I was like, at some point in this year, I gave myself a whole year to do it. It was funny, but the second I did it, all of a sudden there was a talent contest, like in January, and I just signed up for it, and it was like a month out, and then there were so many guys, they pushed it, and so I started like right in the beginning of March. And, like horrible, horrible. Like, I wish like I actually had, I think that's great for a kid to, I think it's great for him to meet a lot of people, you know, like we've had a lot of people come over the first year of my daughter's life. And, so like when people come over, she's not really like, oh my God, who's that? It doesn't fuck with their universe. And then to get them, you know, to talk to the adults or speak, you know, publicly or something. I think that's a huge, that's something I wish, you know, I was so fucking shy. I almost feel like someone needed to do that to kind of nudge me out. But if they did, I probably wouldn't have been as fucked up. I would have become
that's
a comedian. I would have just been some guy.
And it's funny.
My way up to management at this point.
And he's only in first grade. Everyone's like, oh, so he must be the class clown in class. I go, no, he's not. I go, that's why he could be a good comic. He's not the guy, you know, hey, look at me over here, because those guys are never good.
Yeah, there's a lot of hacks in elementary, you know, a lot of fart jokes, a lot of making faces.
And those guys that try to do comedy later are terrible. That are terrible. That, you know, you want the quiet guy that's just sitting back and observing everything and remembering it and writing it down. You don't want the guy jumping on the desk. That's the guy. He's going to be a hack. He's going to do
it. He's the guy you end up meeting at your show later, and he's just like, dude, I was funnier than you. I should have done this shit. And you're like, well, go do it.
Or if he does stand up, he's the guy who does the arms thing at the end, where to go behind a comic and work the arms.
How great was that, though, the first time you saw it?
It was hilarious. It was the greatest thing ever, because I had an itch on my crotch, and they'd have some hot girl, and she'd have to go. I know.
Do you know one of the most misunderstood comedians of all time, I believe, is Gallagher. Because everybody looks at him like he was this fucking guy smashing all this shit. He was making fun of advertising. That's what that bit was.
Right.
Sledge-o-matic. What the hell is it? And it didn't work, but it was all this visual stuff. But so many people took it at face value. They just wanted to go like, oh, my God, we're going to get like cottage cheese all and orange juice all over. They never got the bit. And what killed me is if you watch the beginning of his act, he had some really, really good material, clever material. I remember one time Patrice, rest his soul, was talking to him on the Opie and Anthony show, and he was saying how, you need to pick a path. You know, he was like, you're either going to do this Carlin stuff or you're going to be the guy smashing shit. And like, he just wasn't able to convey it in a way. And I remember listening to it. I was driving. I was listening to it on the radio. And I was just going like, yes, yes, exactly. He had that fucking bit where he sat down in the school desk and he did this whole bit where he was talking about how weird words are spelled in our English language. He started with the word. I just remember him going like something like, it ended up going to like herd. And then he pointed here, is this a bird? No, beard, B-A-R-D. And he did the whole fucking thing. And then in the end, he got back to the word that he started with. And then he just does this, it just all in circles. And that's why I didn't go to school. It's like fucking great bit.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he had to be sitting at a school desk when he did it. So everybody starts going, oh, he's a prop guy. I don't know.
No, I remember he used to do his stand-up. I remember seeing it like Showtime as a kid. He was on roller skates, right? Didn't he do a thing where
he had a giant couch and he put a trampoline in it and shit. And like so everybody would remember that.
Right.
But in the middle of all that, he had this great
material.
No, he had
great. I know he did. I remember at the end, he was almost like Carlin back in the day. Like, he had good, smart material that was funny.
Yeah. But yeah, you come out on a giant fucking tricycle.
And then
a lot of it gets lost.
The greatest. And then he retires and he sells his act to his brother, Gallagher 2. Gallagher 2 goes out and he starts making a fortune. And then Gallagher gets jealous. He goes, wait a minute. Now I want my act back. He's like, no, you sold it to me. And then they had to go to court.
Yeah,
and now Gallagher 2 can't do it anymore. So the real Gallagher's back out there.
Yeah, he told him to do it when he couldn't. I've heard so many stories. And then he told him to stop doing it. I just remember when that came, when Gallagher 2 came to Boston, it was the funniest fucking thing. Because like Gallagher 2 to the layman sounded like, oh, he wrote a new hour. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Ghostbusters part 2, Gallagher part 2, right? So he would go up there and it would be like, it wouldn't take any more than 3 or 4 minutes. Like right out of the gate, it's like, why does his voice sound so weird? Because he kind of looked like him if you sat in the back, and then people would just start, but within 4 minutes, it's like, dude, this isn't Gallagher. Who the fuck is this? And then this murmur would start, and the fucking guy wouldn't even address it, and he would stay up there for an hour. As people going like, who the fuck is this guy? I only watched the first 10 minutes. I had to run out and go do a spot. But the tension in the room, but that was back then where you could actually just do 40. Remember 45 was closing? Just do 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Somehow, then it became like an hour.
I still do 45, a lot of times 45 on the road. Sometimes I'm just going to do 45.
Oh, if you're in like a club and they got a second show.
Yeah, like a Funny Bone or something like that. They got a second show. But even sometimes I just feel like doing 45.
Oh, 45 is great.
It's the best.
Yeah.
Because you look down and you're at 35. You're like, I got fucking 10 more. Not that I want to get off stage, but I'm like, all right, this is going good. I'm good.
45 minutes to close. That's like having a beer in the afternoon. And you got nothing to do for the rest of the fucking day. You know what I'm jealous of is clean comics. Who get to like I've heard Regan will do like afternoon, like a matinee show. And if I ever, for some reason, could find enough fucking animals to show up for a matinee show for me, I would stop working at night. I would do a fucking 2 o'clock. It's like in radio. Remember Opie used to always tell me about like doing how afternoon drive is like the greatest thing because, you know, you have a life. Like you can, if you still want to go out that night, you can. And no matter how hard you hit it, you can sleep because you're not back on the air until like noon or 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But I don't know. When I get old and my whole crowd turns into like the blue hairs, like I will have no fucking problem switching to being the I'll do an afternoon show.
No, you could do a 5 o'clock, a 5 o'clock, and a 7:30 easily. People want to go out early, and all the comedy clubs have switched this time to like 7 o'clock, 7:30 on a Friday first show, and 7 o'clock on a Saturday.
You know what I hate the most? I hate 7 and 10.
Oh yeah, there's too much time in between. Out of me. Absolutely, way too much time.
So you get the goody goody showing up at 10, and then you get the fucking meth heads at 7. Then you get the meth heads at 10. I always think like, why can't we just do 7 and 9? 7 and 9 just.
Exactly. I'll do my tight 45. Get them in. Yeah. Get them out.
What time do you need me off so you can turn this room over? Another pet peeve of mine. Now we're gonna bitch about clubs when the first show starts late. It's like, how did it start late? You knew what time. I can see the second show starting late because you know somebody spilled some drinks and shit. This is right out of the fucking gate.
Right. Yeah. You want to put yourself in a hole right off the bat. Absolutely. If it's 7 o'clock, there's no reason for it to start at 7:15. Just start it at 7. The MC's got to take the bullet. I took the bullet. You took the bullet when you were MCing. Sorry, this motherfucker's got to take it. There's people still walking in. They're eating. Sorry, man.
Yeah, but you know these kids today. They're all just like, hey, can we wait a minute? Because you know, there's people still coming in. I always go, yeah. Don't worry.
Right.
Oh my God, the amount of fucking times. That's the most amazing thing about that Richard Pryor special, the one that he did down there at the Terrace Theater, the one he had the red shirt, when he came out, there was still people getting in their seats. So anybody who's like a nerd for comedy, like that situation is every situation that an opener gets put in. He came out as a headliner on his own special, dealt with that situation, and crushed.
Right.
I actually think, you know, just being a nerd fan of his, that put him in the zone. Because rather than going out and having to jump into a bit going, I am shooting a special and here's my first idea, he went out there and just fucking started riffing. And like, I think it just, after that, like that, it's the greatest special of all time. And
you don't think he had an opener that did time?
No, he did. He
did.
Did he have a band? I used to know this.
Right.
Because I remember Eddie Murphy on Delirious had the Bus Boys from the movie 48 Hours. He had them open. Who the fuck did he have? I used to know this. It was like Gladys Knight or something like that. It was a singer.
Okay.
And they sang and everybody fucking went out to the bathroom afterwards. And they were like, Richard, they're still coming back to the seats. He's like, no, I want to go out now. I want to go out now. Like, he just was feeling it, and they just sent him out there. And I think that the chaos of it was what he kind of thrived in. I don't know. This is like some nerd shit, but just the stuff that I've read about him. Like, when he was in, like, Vegas and everyone was sitting down, he's supposed to wear clean, and, like, that whole structured thing about that. He had, like, a fucking meltdown. But then you get him more in that a little more chaos that was, like, more of like his comfort zone was kind of chaos in a way.
Right.
It seemed, just from what I read. I mean, I don't obviously never met the guy. I'm just.
The worst was that I'm sure you went through this. Remember when you could still smoke in the comedy clubs? The first show Saturday was a no smoking show, and they were always uptight.
Yeah.
They were always the tight asses. They weren't a good crowd. You knew if you just get through that show, the second show is going to be great because they were the drinkers and smokers, and they're fun people, and they'll just laugh. But the first ones are fucking, they want to be home early, they go out early, and they don't want to put up with any smoke, and they were always fucking tired.
Yeah, it felt like a job. Like
always.
They were coming out to just get this done. Let's go to the comedy show.
Yeah.
We'll be home by 9:30. I remember when they used to fucking, like, my first 8 years of stand-up, that would put me to 2000. Right around 2000, they started to have the smoke-free stuff. Like, I had actually had, like, a smoker's cough a little bit. I remember I would wake up the next morning, back when I had hair, and I would get in the shower, and when the water would pour over me, all the smoke that was in my hair, I would just breathe it in. It smelled like I fought a fire. So what I started doing was I noticed I was getting a cough. What I started doing was I'd come home after the shows, and I would immediately take a shower. And I would just fucking throw my, you know, I was still living at home at the time. 8 years. No, I was in New York by then. But like the first 3 years when I was still living at home with my parents, like I would just throw the clothes right in the fucking hamper and all of that shit. And dude, you remember your eyes would be like, I remember being on stage, my eyes were like burning.
The funny bone in St. Louis was always like, it was like a smoke machine. Like you were at a concert. It was like Motley Crue starting off, you know, Shout at the Devil.
Yeah.
You couldn't see a foot in front of you. The whole fucking room smoked. And you're like, holy shit. And you had to do like three shows on a Saturday. I'm like, this is brutal. I'm like, yeah.
So now are you finding with doing like stand up with, because when I went back to New York, I couldn't believe how many groans I was getting. Like I was getting a lot of groans or just like people like kind of looking at each other like, what the fuck? Like, it just blows my mind that young people are like, they act like old people in clubs now. And I feel like they're like, I don't know, like it's because they grew up on social media. Like you're just saying shit like you're going to get in trouble. How have you found, it seems like you think the New York scene's great. Like I'm out of it. I just went back for a couple days and I think I was a little weirded out by some of the people there. Are you finding it that it's maybe
no.
Because you've been there, like you sort of just because you're there every fucking night, like you don't notice it changing?
Yeah, I don't see it changing too much. I mean, I don't see it changing out here either. When I do sets at the Comedy Store or the Improv, I could pretty much do the same set. I don't really feel it. I don't know where you did them, but you know, I know it like at the Stand or New York Comedy Club. They just come in to laugh, and there's not really – no one's really going, man, that crowd sucks. They're so uptight. They're we're not getting that at all.
So you know what it was? I live out here now, so I'm comfortable out here. So I feel like L.A. crowds are better than New York, and it's just because I'm living out here, and I'm just used to it. I think that that's what it is.
Well, I always hated L.A. crowds. When I used to come out 10, 15 years ago, I would – you know, like, why is this guy so angry? On stage, I just didn't get it. You know what I mean? I wasn't physical. I wasn't smiling all the time and shit. I'm like, man, these crowds are rough. And then it turned. I don't know, like maybe like 7, 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Where just you could do whatever you want. The comics were dirty and edgy and they
laughed
at it.
Even like the Laugh Factory, because the Laugh Factory for so long, this is such a weird thing to say. It was too happy a place. It was too well lit. You know, and then I saw that thing in the background look like the Warner Brothers. That's all, folks. Yeah. Like, it just looked like a big fucking cartoon. So I'd get in there, and you could see the whole fucking room. And then I just got like self-conscious when I would go on that stage being like, just if you said anything fucked up. But now I love the club.
It definitely was. I tried to stay away from that club because I never did well in there.
Do you think that like there's going to be a backlash to this, like, sort of like, I don't know, because I'm not saying everything that people get offended by is wrong, because that's not accurate. But the overreaction in this like, I'm kind of thinking how every generation rebels against the other generation, the previous. I'm kind of thinking like the next group of young kids coming up, I guess maybe it's wishful thinking. I'm hoping that they're going to be more like the people I knew in the 70s and 80s.
I don't think so, because this generation, the young ones now, they don't drink. They don't do drugs. They might smoke a little pot. They're not like promiscuous like the last generation before that, where they were, you know, having sex early and getting.
Right.
No one, 19-year-old kids are not going in the woods and drinking. You know what I mean? They're not getting high. They're not doing mushrooms like we did. I was smoking pot at 12 years old. I was drinking,
cigarettes. When you would hide the beers, you were all excited. Like you stole, everybody would like, okay, just steal like 3 beers from your dad. I'll steal 3, blah, blah. And you put together like this stash. And then you'd go and you'd bury them in the fucking woods. Remember when you would go out there and it'd be so fucking cold that they froze?
They froze.
And then you'd have to fucking just sit there.
And just like, slowly sip it.
Yeah, slowly sip. You wouldn't even be getting drunk. It'd be this giant ice of fucking beer. Or they'd get skunked if you left them out there too long. Every weekend, it was like you'd go to the woods, you'd get as fucked up as you possibly could, and then the cops would show up every fucking weekend, chase you out of there, and everyone would leap in their cars, wasted. I mean, there has to be a happy medium between that and what the fuck is going on. I like how I'm talking about this like I know what kids are doing. They're also doing like fucking ecstasy and meth and shit. It is pretty nuts.
Yeah, but seriously, they're not out, you know, like drinking and stuff like that. I got a bunch of nieces and nephews and their friends and stuff like I see it, and none of them are doing anything. They don't touch alcohol. They don't smoke. They're not even in the
weed. Yeah, but why would you, dude? If there was a flat screen TV in your house, you know, and these kids, a lot of people got like a couple of them. There's like a fucking TV in like every major room in their house. You can go online, talk to people, playing video games. You can watch porn.
Right on your phone.
Yeah, you can watch plane. You can watch a plane. Think how fucked up it is that you can just watch footage of a plane crashing. Nobody knew what the fuck that looked like when we were growing. You had to go to, like, there was some war footage. But you can just watch. You can literally see anything. What does it look like when a guy jumps off the building and hits the pavement? What does that look like? I don't know what that website is because I was never into the death shit.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember some of those fucking comics I was came up with when all that ISIS shit, when they were sawing people's fucking heads off, they would go on and watch it. And then they would come in like, oh, God, that was so fucked up. I was like, why would you do that? Like, I actually know, like, I did a bit one time about being on fire, screaming and blah, 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 blah. And a buddy of mine, a comic I knew, told me, he goes, that's actually not the noise people make when they get burned to death. And he started imitating the noise. It was even creepier. And I'm like, how the fuck do you know that? And he goes, you know, I've watched some pretty dark shit. It's like, you fucking, somebody got burned to death and you sat and fucking watched it? I don't know.
I saw one ISIS beheading video. My brother sent it to me. And he's like, don't worry. It's not what it is. It's a joke at the end. Just watch it through the end. Just to mess with me. And it was, it's still, that was like 15 years ago, 10 years ago. I still can't get it out of my mind. I never watch that stuff.
Never.
I don't want to see anybody get hit by a car. I don't want to see any of that shit.
Well, if they live.
Yeah, if they live. They live. Yeah.
It's just kind of, you know, I like the happy medium, if you can't handle a car, is somebody getting gored by a bull. Because it's literally like the only thing cartoon does not exaggerate is how high you go in the air when a bull hits you.
That's true.
Dude, I got out of my phone. I left my phone. This guy fucking, this dude's running and he's in, you know, he's a fucking idiot. He's in the ring with a bunch of other guys, a bunch of bulls running around, and he didn't have his head on the swivel. He gets fucking shot up in the air and the bull takes off and the guy goes into like a fetal position and then everybody comes and saves him. And now he's running, like looking back to see if the bull's coming. And as he's looking back, another bull comes to the front fucking really? Hits the guy again. Yeah. It was just like if he was an NFL player, it was like he was on special teams or some shit and his career's going to be over. I do have to read a little bit of advertising here, but I didn't even say how great it is to see you. I don't ever get to see you now that I became a big phony out here in Hollywood.
Well, you know, when you got a kid too, man, it's a whole other.
Yeah, it's this weekend is my daughter's first birthday.
First birthday, wow.
And I'm baking my first cake. And my wife invited all these people. There's going to be all these kids there. But we're going to have a cool, like, it's like adult food.
Right.
You know, if you want some whiskey or something like that, whatever, you know, if the other spouse is cool, we'll let you drive. It's fine. And then we got all this cool shit for the kids.
And you
like,
never
like
thought.
Our gift bag is like this fucking bag of, like, gummy bears. And just, I don't know. Kids love gummy bears, right?
You know, 10 years ago, you never thought you'd be baking a cake. But my theory is whenever you think, like, I don't know if I could do this, this is kind of. You do for the kid. If there's a kid involved, you get a pass.
Oh yeah, no. My wife said to me, she's going like, I don't know, it's gonna be all these people because the recipe I had was for like a 2-layer cake, and then she's going, man, want to make it a 3, and then she's just like, well, you know, you could just go to the grocery store and do the Duncan Hines thing, and I was like, no, I'm not fucking doing that.
Right.
All right. I'm doing this every year. Like, this is one of these things that you got to have on the resume for like when your kid gets old to be like, what kind of dad was my dad made me a cake every year. I got to at least have that because I'm a fucking lunatic and I know I'm going to snap.
Well, my
and
son's
be a
got
a volatile person to be around. I'm an asshole. So I at least got to come through with a cake, right?
No, you have to document everything too, because they don't believe you. That's the advice I got from other parents. Take pictures because they're not going to believe that you took them to Disneyland every year and all this, and you did all the shit with them. So whenever I take my son anywhere, an event, I take a picture. So I go, hey, motherfucker, this is what I did at 5. This is what I did at 6. Look what I did. Dan Marino told me that. Marino told me that one time.
Dude, you know he came out to my show and I didn't even get to see him.
He did?
To meet him. Yeah, somebody said, hey, Dan Marino was out when I was in Fort Lauderdale. I was like, fuck. I would have loved if he came back. He's such like a humble guy.
Oh, he's great. He's awesome, man.
I got to tell him what I've been wanting to tell him forever. I was like, dude, if you played today in your prime with these rules of coverage, you would throw for 6,000 yards without a problem every season. And he's like, oh, man, I appreciate that. I appreciate that.
No, he knows. He still loves to show off his arm. He loves to just go, let me just show you. When he did those rock and jock things on the Super Bowl, those rappers, you know, like Q-Tip or something, and he's firing at him.
Did you see, you must have watched Dan Marino Football Life.
It was phenomenal.
Was it arm goes up, ball comes out? It still looked like when they were just showing him throwing the ball, it looked like they sped up the film. It's like a fucking a viper. You can't even see it. It just fucking goes up in the ball, and it's a tight spiral. That's funny. Listen, motherfucker, I took you here. I took you here. You're going to say it to you?
So just document and take pictures the whole time. We didn't do anything, Dad.
I'm already worried that when they go through that period where inevitably they hate you, because the kid gets to a point where they know enough shit that they think they're ready to live on their own. That comes around, like, what, 11, 12, 13? And then you just got to wait till they're, like, 26, I think. And then they're kind of like, oh, wait a minute. You know, it's a rough – it seems like it's a rough 15 years. Let me read this bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Stop doing this Dr. Phil shit. All right. Oh, MeUndies, everybody. Oh, MeUndies, MeUndies. Motherfucker, I took you here. Boo-doo-doo-doo. MeUndies, MeUndies. I opened your fucking first beer. All right, MeUndies, you want to look good in your underwear and be comfortable, right? But that perfect balance is hard to find. Don't sacrifice style or comfort. Why would you do that? Talk about why MeUndies is the best underwear you will ever own. Well, it's free. They send it to me. You know, so I'll wear it, feel how good it feels on my balls, and then I'll tell you guys how great it is. It is. I got to tell you, it is pretty amazing. And it's got a superhero vibe to it, so I always feel a little stronger when I wear it. Does that contractually fill my obligation there? MeUndies will be the most comfortable pair of underwear you will ever own. Made from sustainably sourced, natural soft fabric that is 3 times softer than cotton. Ultimate feel-good undies for what you want to feel. For when you want to feel naked, what? Ultimate feel-good undies for when you want to feel naked, not be naked. All right. Sentence always trips me up. 100% satisfaction guarantee. They guaranteed you will love your undies or your money back right now. MeUndies has an exclusive offer for my listeners. Get 20% off your first pair and free shipping. And MeUndies is so sure you will love their underwear, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. This is the point in the coffee where I want to start fucking crying because I'm so bad at reading out loud and I still have like another 3 paragraphs. All right. You order a pair, and if you don't love your first pair, get a full refund. This is a no-brainer. 20% off, free shipping, and 100% satisfaction guarantee. What are you waiting for? To get your 20% off, free shipping, and their 100% satisfaction guarantee, and get the best and softest underwear you will ever own, go to MeUndies.com/Burr. That's MeUndies.com/Burr. This is a limited-time offer. So what are you waiting for? Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed my life, evidently, according to the copy. Yeah, if I wasn't wearing these, I wouldn't have had Jim Florentine on here promoting his book, Everybody's Awful Except for You, available now. That's like the joke within a joke. The ad within an ad. Start wearing the best underwear of your life. It changed my life. It's time to let MeUndies change yours. Go to MeUndies.com/Burr right now. All right. Let's wrap this up. I want to get Jim Florentine's NFL picks for this weekend. Patriots, Jags, you already picked the Pats. Now let's talk about the Eagles and the Vikings, two teams that have never won a Super Bowl. Neither the Jaguars. 3 out of 4 teams have not won a Super Bowl.
That's a tough one. This is going to be, you know, because of 2 backup quarterbacks in there. Minnesota's got a good you don't know what Nick Foles is going to show up.
Right.
I'm going to go Philly.
You're going to go Philly at
home? I'm going to go Philly at home.
Philly at home. Fucking
yeah.
Ends all that excitement in Minnesota.
Yeah, I think so.
Ends in the city of brotherly love.
Because they should have lost that New Orleans game.
They should have.
You know,
they did lose it. And then New Orleans fucked the whole thing up.
So, yeah.
Imagine
if you were a diehard Saints fan.
Dude, that would be like? That would literally be like if you did a fucking stand-up special, you had the greatest special of all fucking time, and then right at the end of your special, you went to put the mic in the mic stand, and somehow you did like a fucking face plant. I'm trying to think like what you could do. Like you did it.
Or maybe there was no audio.
All you have to do is wave. No, but you'd have to go and somehow you fucked up the audio.
Right, okay, yeah.
No, in the end, you just go, I like fucking kids. And you take your dick out and start jerking off. No, maybe it's not that bad.
And I think the Eagles, maybe a field goal. They'll win it. Win it by a field, and then it'll be Philly and Patriots. And Patriots, you know.
Okay.
31-20, something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping the Patriots win. And
Brady's just look at the quarterbacks. That's what you got to do.
Who has a better defense, Eagles or Vikings?
The Vikings.
I kind of, what the Vikings are on the road. They got a better defense, and then, you know, they got a backup, but he's their guy at this point.
Yeah.
Case Keenum. That's what's making me feel old now, is the names of quarterback, Case, Carson. It's just like our generation is gone. There's,
yeah.
No, there's no Gems. There's no Bills.
No, there's right? not anymore. There's no Steve. Remember, yeah. Steve? There's no Steve DeBerg anymore.
Yeah, Steve DeBerg.
Dan Marino.
You know.
Steve Young.
The only guy left is like Jay, your guy. Jake Cutler.
Yeah,
Jake,
well, I got.
Jake's not a.
My field goal kicker's Cody. There was never a Cody on the Dolphins till last year.
Oh, they love the C names. That whole everybody born in the 90s seemed to have like a C name. It started with Clemens. Oh, no, he named everything with a K.
He
had a Cody, but like it was that. All right, so you're picking. I'm going to say I'm hoping the Patriots win, and then I have no idea. Oh, such a fucking hard one. I would actually say the Vikings go in and break the Eagles' heart, but the football god smiled on them last week. Am I going to go against the Vikings again this week? I can't do that because then if they win, I'll have to go against them again if the Patriots win, and then I'll be jinxing my own team. So do I. No, fuck that.
And I don't think there's going to be a big home field advantage if the Vikings get into the Super Bowl. A lot of those are corporate tickets. And it doesn't – the Patriots can play anywhere, so it doesn't matter.
Right. I think that's a tough one. That's the game. Vikings-Eagles is a game.
That's going to be a good one.
I'm going to say Vikings. I'm pick. No. You took the Eagles? I'll take the Vikings. Fuck it. I'll take the Vikings.
Yeah.
I just think the old Nick Foles is going to show up. Old Nick Foles shows up. But both of those fucking teams, both those franchises, the football gods love to fucking yank the rug out from underneath them.
I know.
I think there's a chance the stadium might collapse onto both teams. Either way, it's going to be great. Jim, so great to see you. So awesome to have you on the podcast. And once again, Everybody Is Awful Except You is available now for pre-order.
Pre-order. Yeah,
pre-order.
February 20th.
And February 20th, you can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. And to quote Jim Florentine, all of that shit, you'll be able to get it. Really happy for you, buddy. Continue success, and hope to run into you in New York. All right?
Thanks, man.
All right.